Strategy and Insider, exploring future trends and their impacts.
Welcome to the Strategy and Insider podcast. Thanks for tuning in to this new episode. I'm Thomas, the host of this podcast and a partner at Strategy End, which is PwC's strategy consulting business. With me today is one of the most successful and influential investors of healthcare and digital ventures worldwide. He is a perfect match for this podcast, in which I discuss the latest trends and most innovative developments around the future of health. That is why I'm more than thrilled that he agreed to come onto the show, and I can't wait to actually start today's conversation. My guest is Christian Angermeyer, a serial entrepreneur and investor with a business portfolio of more than 100 tech companies in Europe, North America, and Asia. He manages his ventures via his family office called Apeiron Investment Group, with currently over $2.5 billion under management and a team of more than 50 people across 6 international locations. Apeiron is engaged in everything from startup funding to large-scale growth rounds, as well as even investments into listed companies. The investment firm is active in life sciences, fintech and crypto, future tech and experiences, natural resources and clean energy, as well as the hospitality sector. Christian himself is what you can easily call a self-made man, having started his career at a young age by building his first company even during high school. In the 1990s, when he studied economics at the University of Bayreuth in the south of Germany, he founded an investment company with two partners, which had more than 40 companies under management. And in 2012, Christian started the Apeiron Investment Group. And 7 years later, in 2019, he also founded Preside Capital, the flagship venture capital fund for Apeiron. But he's not only a serial investor, as he also built his own biotech companies, such as Ribopharma in 2000, which focuses on RNA interference therapeutics for genetically defined diseases, as well as Atai Life Sciences in 2018, which is a company that is active in mental health drug development. Apart from these business activities, Christian is also an active voice in societal as well as political discussions, being a young global leader of the World Economic Forum, being an advisor to President Paul Kagame of Rwanda, and also a founding member of President Macron's Scale Up Europe initiative, amongst other things. So coming back to our main topic, healthcare, there, Christian's focus lies on longevity and mental health, as well as on what he describes the theme of happiness. And despite the fact that it might sound a bit cheesy, but happiness is indeed right on cue, because I'm more than happy to have you, Christian. Really big thanks for taking the time and being with me today.
Well, thanks for having me. And with all that intro, we need to live up to it. That's a very high bar. Hopefully we don't disappoint, but I'm going to try my best.
It's all fact-based, so that's why it's all the truth, right? But yeah, you managed to achieve all that despite still not being at a very high age. So it's really, really impressive. Hey, while your family office, probably let's start there, is active in a number of fields, as I mentioned in the intro, it is, to me at least, very evident that you have a particular affinity to healthcare, as you also have found your own biotech companies. And recently, your investment group has also been focusing on longevity and psychedelics. Actually, have you ever considered pursuing rather a career as a doctor or a healthcare professional instead of becoming ultimately a founder and an investor?
That's a good question. Nobody has ever asked me that. There was a moment, but just a small one in high school where I was, doctor could be also interesting. But I kind of always knew, if I go back since I'm since I can remember, the first memories are when I was 6 years old. At the end, I always wanted to be an entrepreneur. Even I had a moment when I wanted to be a teacher, but then I turned that passion of explaining things and teaching things into a business, which was kind of my first business. I always call it a semi-professional business because I was 14. Yeah, but I had started a tutoring company and employed actually 10 people every weekend, other students teaching younger pupils. But anyway, so I had, so literally always when I thought about something else, then I came always back or like, no, I actually want to be an entrepreneur, but I can include that kind of, let's call it sub passions. Like, oh, I was always very interested in science and in health. But again, I was always very interested in or a passion for teaching things. Like, that's why I'm here on the podcast. I like to talk about things like, but like the overarching thing always was being an entrepreneur.
And next to that overarching entrepreneur thing, I think what also describes you is that you're full of interests, it seems, because next to your role as a founder and investor, you're also an art collector and even a movie producer. And your art collection, I learned, consists of ancient artifacts which portray the importance of psychedelics for human history. And in the movie business, you also have an impressive track record of more than 20 films that you produced as a producer already. You stated, I read that recently, that the arts do play a significant role in making us happy, which reverts back to the theme of happiness that I was quoting before. Of course, although curating of an art collection and also producing of movie undoubtedly is a serious business, but I was wondering, what is it primarily to you? Is that more a way to relax and be happy when you do that? Or is that rather another field of business to you?
Well, first, okay, there's a lot of answers. Like the first thing is like, I think it's not even always the best way to think about, oh, is this either a way to relax or a business, like
got it.
Sort of, I would say if you would ask me, like anything I do is like a perpetual hobby because mm-hmm. I don't need to work. So if I go back, like I had this first company, the first real one, again, I had the tutoring company in my high school days. But then right when I had started university, I actually had started, never finished it, starting economics, mm-hmm. but I had a science scholarship. And in literally the first session with my tutors, with my science tutors, I was asking them, hey guys, where's the world going? What, let's not start with the bees and the flowers or whatever. Like, let's like, what is like in your mind? What's going to be cool in 20 years? I don't know why, but I was always very interested. Where's the world going? And these two guys, luckily, were actually thinking about something big. Uh-huh. They told me something which later got the name RNAi technology. And they were just in the finding phase. Should they do it as a university project or whatever? And I was the one who said, guys, this, I didn't even fully understand details. I would sort of lie if I say that because they were like the big guys in genetics. And I was 19, 20, 20. but I was always very good in like getting very quickly like a sense and sort of a good feeling for things. And I was like, guys, if I think I understand what you want to do, like, you can't do that at university. You need to do it as a company because if it works, and I trust you because you're very competent, then this is going to be a multi-billion dollar company. So my contribution was like talking them into starting a company with me. Or actually they turned around and said, have you ever done a company? As I said, a semi-professional company, the tutoring one. I was like, yeah, sure. Like I was always very self-confident. And so we started it together. And again, I was like, okay, first of all, and it sounds simple, but I know it's hard if you're working for a company, whatever, but I think everybody should sort of strive a little bit to see or structure their life that way. It was like, I just want to do things which personally excite me because why not? Like, why would I do things which are not exciting? Again, if I don't have to do it, but I want to do it. I see my life as one giant sort of hobby or work of passion. And then the second rule was like, I don't want to work with assholes because again, why should I? Because life is too short to have sort of bad people around you. And these are still sort of my two very basic guiding principles where I'm trying to like, I want to have fun working because again, if I would split my life between work and, oh, this is free time having fun, then and it would be actually a sad life because I work a lot and I work a lot because I really
you enjoy
like it.
It.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I enjoy it. Having said that, I also think, and it's maybe more like, at the scale, it's more a German sort of thing, which I never liked. It's like that people always try to pin you down and like, oh, you need to focus and whatever. And by the way, there might be people who really want to focus. Yeah. I think mm-hmm. it's more like a question. What's your nature? Whatever. But like, I was always interested in a lot of things, like, so literally the scholarship I had, which actually made me meet these two biotech guys, was called like a scholarship like for highly gifted students with an interest in literally everything, because I was very lucky. Like, I had very good grades, literally the best of Bavaria in every single subject, because I didn't really want to decide. I loved languages like Latin equally to math, equally to science, whatever. So, and I found, with being an entrepreneur and investor, I found a great platform to sort of live out and sort of live my passions and my various interests. And taking that whole answer one step higher, and we talked about this theme of happiness, and also a little bit you touched based on psychedelics as a sort of what we're working for as mental health treatments. But like, one of the big underlying and important things which help people to be happy, or where you need to start, is starting to really know yourself and sort of know what makes you happy and not. And while this sounds very simple, I think one of the big tragics of our Western lifestyle is that from a day on we're born, we rather are pushed into certain roles and like how other people see us and want us to be. And then, as I said, like, oh, you need to fit in, and like, can't believe how much I heard in my life. Oh, you need to focus and you need to just do one thing. Why are you doing biotech and crypto and movies? And I was like, why not?
Thanks for that really insightful answer. And there is so much I would love to drill into. But coming probably also to your family office, Apeiron, that stems, I learned from the Greek, and I never had Greek at school, Apeiron. Yeah? I'm surely pronouncing it wrongly now, which means, however, without end, and can also be translated like unlimited, boundless, or infinite. And that also somehow obviously matches your passion for longevity. Can you allude a little why you are interested in this topic, and also probably share a bit, does that also somehow influence your personal life?
So many deep questions. So, by the way, first of all, it's like a nuance, because you said it right in the Greek word. So it's Apeiron, because Apeiron is a mythical horse. I think of either Hercules or Perseus. And Apeiron indeed is sort of the infinite, boundless. Meaning, first of all, I like the word. I'm very geeking out over Greek and Latin, and I loved it in high school. But then also, again, it sort of is a good symbol or a good transcendent meaning for, I have a very positive view on the world. Everything is abundant. We just need to sort of have the right attitude. So I'm always the glass is half full guy and optimistic. Like, and when it comes to longevity, meaning indeed, like, this is one of the themes where indeed sort of the infinite plays out. Like, I do believe that we, meaning we with the work we're doing at Apeiron, but in general, we as humanity, because also other people and companies work on it, we will be able to prolong human lifespan gradually. It's not going to be that you wake up and you read, oh, Christian made it and we're all going to be 200 now. But I think over the next 20, 30 years, we're going to push human life expectancy gradually. And even already our generation, definitely the generation of my godsons or whatever, who are 10, 12, 14, will be able to live some 100 years.
When checking your website, you also have quite a couple of bold statements actually talking about in the next 10 to 30 years, there will be a healthy human lifespan towards several hundred years, even signs of rejuvenation or turning back the signs of aging, and also describing aging as a disease, which in our terms we would call kind of a bold and unafraid statement. What makes you kind of confident that humans can actually live for 100, well, 100 is not unheard of, but 200 and plus years?
Well, it's not even like, I don't think it's so bold, but I know I can see how people see it. Yeah, because it's not like that I'm just, I don't know, make up these numbers or whatever. It's like when I look at our biotech portfolio, and a big portion of it is in that field, what you would call longevity science. And then even in other sort of companies I know of, or we work together with, because it's a very, biotech is a very friendly industry. So I can see that there are many, many therapies and new modalities in the making. So not just, oh, we hope someone, we're going to find something. No, it's really like stuff which is not yet ready yet for commercial use, but which is on, right, for the people who know biotech, like you have preclinical and then phase 1, 2, and 3. Like, so, and there are drugs which are in phase 1 or 2, which will help pushing life expectancy, full stop. Mm-hmm. And then the important thing is, again, I said it, but like, I want to say it again, because sort of the two things where people are sometimes emotionally pushing back on that or don't believe it, that A, it's the notion that there will be these one day and they're going to wake up and then the headline is Christian made it and now we're living 50 years longer. And that's not going to happen. So, but what's going to happen is that we and others going to find a multitude of new treatments, which all together will push life expectancy gradually. So it's going to be 1 year more and another year more and whatever. But definitely, that I'm very convinced of, in the next, let's say, 10 to 15 years, we're going to have this one magic year where we're going to win more than 1 year of life expectancy. So meaning more than the one calendar year we lost. Mm-hmm. And from that, it's called aging or longevity escape velocity. So from that 1 year on, where we lose one calendar year, but win more than that in life expectancy, yeah, practically it's like a rat race. We can go on forever, but forever, we can come to it in a second, there will be an end. But like, we can go on for a very long time, but we just add more life expectancy than the time we lose. And then obviously, if you look at biotech, by the way, the same view people realize much more when they look at their phone, for example, you have exponential growth. It's not linear. It's not every year the same. But like now with AI, by the way, biotech drug development will accelerate in an unheard way. You might not feel it in biotech immediately because there is a gap of like 10 years between new science and the science coming to market. Yeah, but like, then you're going to see it like, and then you're going to see it exponentially. So anyway, so it's going to be a gradual sort of shift, but I think we're going to come into this positive escape velocity and then we can go on for a very long time. Do I believe it's going to be forever? No, because statistically everything has to end somewhere. And I always jokingly say, if we live long enough, that solar system will end. Yeah. But by the way, already earlier, I believe as long as we stay fully human, that is another discussion. How will we change mentally from our sort of psychology, whatever? But if we stay from a mental setup as we are now, let's call it humans, I think we want to die somewhere. I think the finite experience of life is part of our human condition. But who tells us that this is not in 200 years instead of 80 years?
Sure.
But what I believe is like, again, if we stay fully human and not change our brain, which is another discussion, then I think there comes always the point where people will say, you know what? I had enough. I want to die now. And I think we, as a society, we have to completely change. And again, sooner than we all think, the view we have on dying and on self-chosen death, whatever, because we can't force people to live till 200. People might want to check out earlier.
And interesting enough, I mean, I'm also, me personally, but we also as a practice within the firm, at least, we absolutely believe that the future of healthcare will be much more people-centric and preventative, enhancing, personalized, and whatsoever. And I do believe that innovation will immerse a lot around the preventative field. And as of such, we have also been recently doing a societal survey in Europe, the US and Asia, have been asking, amongst others, those people whether they would be preventing and why would they preventing. And they gave some very interesting answers because there wasn't kind of a Gauss curve saying, I want to either extend or want to live my best life in the given period. So it was not kind of a Gauss curve that you would normally expect, but the two extremes had almost 50% of all the answers. Half of the people have been saying, well, I want to extend my life as much as possible and do everything possible to extend it. And the other part said, no, I don't want to extend, but I just want to be in the best health shape ever possible and have the best life ever, regardless of whether it's long or not. So it's kind of not the one person or the one persona that you would cater for.
But it's kind of a weird question because it's both true at the same time. Meaning, by the way, I think another misperception is that a lot of people who are asked that question subconsciously believe that they're going to be in a very bad state just for longer. So they know like a 90-year-old auntie and she's in bad condition, bound to the bed, whatever. And in their mind, they're like, oh shit, we're just adding another 10, 20 years to that life. And nobody wants that.
So fair enough.
What was very important is life extension and sort of health span, like go hand in hand. Like we cannot prolong life, like just technically, without not actually rejuvenating it because it's all intertwined. So, and when you turn the question around and say, look, I can't even imagine that there is anybody, if I ask you the question now, look, by the way, you will have the option in the future that you live till whatever, 100, 200, in the same state you are now. And by the way, I always emphasize it's an option. If you don't want it, that will be, that's my whole point. If people don't want it, they have to be allowed to check out. But like, who would say no? By the way, we're meaning your firm is also like in the auditing space. Like, who wouldn't take a free option? Free option you always take. If I give you the option to live to 200 in your current state, you take it and you say, look, and if I read this, rethink it, or reconsider, then I just check out. Like, there is no reason to say no. I think the questions are always framed in the wrong way. Mm. Yeah. Again, or people subconsciously think, oh, I'm going to be in a bad state or whatever.
No, it's a very fair unconscious bias, actually, that we put into that question. And I'll take that away, actually. But if you are successful, I know you put into perspective, obviously, it's not a from 100 to 200 years jump and it's gradual. But if you are and others are successful, some also societal and ethical implications will be to be watched. Things like food supply, enough living space for people on Earth, because we're not stopping to get children, I guess. So, I mean, this needs to go hand in hand. Is there also kind of discussions amongst your companies and food supply, living space, whatsoever suppliers to bring that kind of in a perfect kind of togetherness?
Yes, like, let's go through it because like there is very many nuances. Like, by the way, most of the stuff will already be relevant if we just live till 100 in average. Mm-hmm. You said, oh, that's people start realizing, oh, 100 could be the new normal or 90 or 95, whatever. So, and by the way, but that alone, again, hopefully in better health will change. Let's start with society. Will change society dramatically. Like, we don't even need to talk about 100 years more. We just need to talk about what 10 years of more and again, healthy life expectancy will do to society. And it's actually crazy that politicians all around the world completely ignoring that this is going to happen the next 10, 20 years. Meaning you can start with all the social systems in Europe. Yeah. They're going to be completely toast. Yeah. Because mass doesn't work up anymore. Mm-hmm. But also we have to think about, and I'm always thinking that when I read, all these absurd debates. Oh, should we do like 65 or 67 or whatever? When is the pension age? It's completely insane. Meaning this comes still from Napoleon and from Bismarck, who practically said like, oh, if you're still alive of 65, because I think the time when they invented the 65-year-old pensioner age, the average life expectancy was 67. So practically what they said is like, oh, if you make it till then we give you 2 years of pension. Yeah. We're now getting older and older. Yeah. And we need to rethink it because of all the social systems. But I also believe people don't want to retire. Like, who wants to be in perfect health at 65, which more and more people are, and sit around in perfect health and do nothing and not be a valuable part of society for 30 years. Yeah. So again, so we need to rethink social systems, but we also need to rethink how we include, let's call it elderly people who are then perceived not that elderly anymore, but actually fit and vital, like how
more experienced.
Except we have more experience, how we include these people in society. Yeah. Just to name two sort of societal stuff. I'm less worried about all that sort of overpopulation issues because first, meaning it's proven that the more wealthy and sort of the more advanced societies get, actually the number of children is collapsing. I'm actually more in kind of Elon Musk's camp that we actually gonna have a problem that we have too little children and too little people than too many. So that is one thing. And then in generally, I'm extremely, not just optimistic, but it's already the case where we now, we don't need to have hunger when you say food supply or whatever. We already have enough in the world. Yeah. The problem is always, most often it's leaders, or in this case, bad leaders, bad politicians, who kind of abuse systems and then create sort of hunger and famine and all of these problems. But it's not that we're too many people. It's kind of the sort of how the assets, in this case, food we all have, are actually distributed. And then lastly, where though I do agree that we can make it even better, I think so. It's not just so much about, oh, do we have enough? I think we have enough. Again, it's just more like about the distribution of it. But is the current form sustainable in terms of climate and whatever? For example, farming, animal farming is a side of the sort of kind of tragedy, because like these animals are not well. It's also a huge drag on climate, because like pooping cows, so to say, simplified, are a good contributor to CO2 emissions. So what I believe a lot in is actually lab grown meat, fish, dairy, and all of that, because we can sort of produce even more if we need it. Although I think it's not the quantity we need, but we can produce it in a better quality, both individual quality, because a lot of the stuff we're eating is actually very bad. Like, think about like sort of salmon farms, which is neither nice for the salmons nor for the quality of it. Yeah, so I think you can do a lot of food you can produce in a higher quality in labs. By the way, and it's real. I don't have a better word for it, but I don't like the term lab grown food, because then people think about artificial food, but it's actually real meat, real fish, just that you don't grow it, the meat or the fish in an or around
in an organ.
Yeah. In an organ, but like, or in a being, but like
a being. Yeah.
At the end, you could say a cow is nothing else than a bioreactor with maybe a soul, or at least a consciousness. Yeah. And if we can remove the wholesome being and just have the same processes in a bioreactor, you come to the same outcome and you practically spare animals a lot of pain and at the same time have more of it at a higher quality. So I'm a big fan of that.
And I mean, you have a plethora of platform companies, and some of them do also focus on developing medicines and to treat and prevent some of the most debilitating illnesses, such as obesity, autoimmune diseases, cardiovascular events, and even cancer. I'm myself a medic by train. I know that there is also biochemical kind of linkages between many of them, but you have kind of a very ambitious goal to develop interventions that treat specific diseases first, to then use them as a preventative measure to improve overall quality of life as we age, and use that as a preventative measure. So it's not only that you are interested in longevity, but also finding a cure to some of the most common diseases of our time, unfortunately. If you could bet, where would you see the greatest potential for such a cure in any of those fields of sickness?
What do you mean with greatest potential?
Greatest potential for a cure. I mean, are we rather able to cure kind of obesity, or curing cardiovascular events, or some sort of cancer?
If I may add, because that's the most near term, and the most, we talked about happiness, the one dearest to me, if you add sort of mental health issues, another big problem, like depression, anxiety, addiction. There, we're actually closest, I would say, to finding there's never going to be a solution for 100% of the patients, because all these diseases you mentioned are in nuances, there are subforms, whatever. But if I look at psychedelics, which is sort of one of my core beliefs, that psychedelics, which people might know under the colloquial names like magic mushrooms, LSD, ayahuasca, whatever, that these psychedelic substances and treatments, I believe they deserve place back, because there actually had been medical treatments in the 50s and 60s. They deserve a place back in the medicine. Yeah. And I think, not just I think, so I can see in our data, we're just producing, and we're close to phase three data for some of them. So we're going to sort of prove once and for all that they have the ability to soften and actually for many cure all these mental health issues. So, and that will be like, again, it will not cure 100% of all mental health issues, but I think psychedelics will completely change the way we treat. And finally, it will also give us the potential to cure mental health issues, which I think will have, from all the stuff I'm doing, the biggest near-term impact on the field of medicine, and by that actually on the field, on the whole world, because I believe mental health issues are sort of actually the underlying problem for many other societal problems we face.
And on the psychedelics front, I mean, in one of your interviews, you recently mentioned that the interest into this was also sparked to own experiences, such as magic mushrooms and others, you name it, and also having a positive impact on business, impacting performance as an investor or an entrepreneur. What's kind of the most revealing experience? And I'm very interested in understanding, is that really kind of also upping your power to make decisions, to focus more, to concentrate more? Or what is it that you see it personally in that?
In a first instance, psychedelics obviously are developed for treating, let's say, clinically relevant indications. So we're developing psychedelics as treatment for things like depression, anxiety, actually addiction of other drugs, because psychedelics are extremely anti-addictive, post-traumatic stress disorder, and all of that. That is already in itself, it's a huge market, unfortunately. Like more than 1 billion people globally have clinically diagnosed mental health issues, which by the way means, because mental health, unfortunately, is still a very stigmatized group of issues, that much more people than these 1 billion really have it. And there are still, unfortunately, a lot who don't dare to seek help. That what is sort of kind of clinically defined as an issue is already the biggest market out there. By the way, if you have a treatment like psychedelics, which our studies show, and hopefully the final ones in phase three as well, that they practically, if taken under medical guidance, that's super important when people are listening like now, I do not want to make psychedelics consumer legal so that they sold in any coffee shop around the corner. What we want to do with our company, Atai, we want to make psychedelics medically available under the supervision of a therapist or a doctor. That means in the future, once our drugs are approved, people have the option or the possibility that they go to a therapist, but they will have to do it with the therapist while they're taking psychedelics and then they're going home. Super important. But
super important, yeah.
But once that is available, why wouldn't people say, you wait a moment, I'm going through a stressful phase in the job. I'm going through a stressful phase in my marriage or whatever. Like I think we all know a bit, oh, this is now a time I need to be very careful with my mental health. Yeah. And instead of waiting and hoping that you don't get depression, but clearly knowing kind of I'm going through a risky phase in my life, why wouldn't people go ex ante before something bad happens, before you develop a mental health disease, to a therapist and say, you know what? I'm kind of going to a stressful period. I want to do a psychedelic therapy because I don't want to get depression in the first place.
Got it.
So that is already sort of thing. And then the second step, because you asked me, and I said it in many interviews that I think psychedelics made me a better entrepreneur, a better investor. There is one side effect, positive side effect of psychedelics, which I think will lead to literally most people, give it some years, the vast majority of people seeking a psychedelic therapy once or twice a year, is the following. Like round about at the age of 30, our brain starts aging. Luckily, the very bad stuff like Alzheimer's, dementia and all of that, that comes at sort of very later, but like what people underestimate, that round about with the age of 30, the same like your body is aging. People know it and say, oh, when I'm 40, I can't put muscles on, whatever. Like you see it, like a 40, 50 year old body is different from a 20 year old, but the same, you just don't see it, is happening to your brain. And one of the biggest sort of outcomes of that aging process of the brain is, in the early days of aging, of brain aging, is that people look at life and problems and everything more and more in a very stiff and rigid way. Mm-hmm. Like in Germany, you say, man denkt immer in den gleichen Bahnen. You always think in the same sort of spheres or whatever. Yeah?
Spheres, traces, yeah.
Well, and by the way, you can see that. It's not just a theory. Like if I would take a person and give the same person, let's say, a book to read or a math equation to solve every single year, and would make an MRI every single year while the person is doing that, you would see that from the age of 30 on, every time the person would use less and less of its brain, and literally it would be the same sort of ways of thinking more and more. So practically you narrow down more and more. Yeah. And that is not good. Yeah. At the same time, positively said, when we get older, we have more experience, we have more wisdom, we have more craftsmanship. But what you ideally want, the dream for every, I don't know, I guess that people listening are managers, CEOs, entrepreneurs, whatever. What you ideally want, you want the craftsmanship and the experience of, let's say, a 50-year-old, but combined with the innovation power and the power to think novel thoughts of a 20-year-old. That together is a killer combination. Yeah. And now the good news is this is what psychedelics give you, because what they do as a kind of secondary effect, that the weeks and months after you have done a psychedelic session, literally your brain is growing. It's called neuroplasticity. So you develop new pathways. Yeah, your brain literally also grows a little bit in volume. And this is associated with what the capacities and the way of working of a younger brain. So you literally rejuvenate your brain, but obviously at the same time, you keep the experience and everything you had. And that is, I truly believe, like I'm 46 now, that I'm able to do my job that well as I'm able to do it. Yeah. And I'm very interested as well in novel stuff, whatever. It's because of sort of the kind of, let's call it, rejuvenation power of psychedelics.
Super, super interesting, to be honest. But I mean, it's a breadth of experiences that you obviously have, and also all the investments that you made in various kinds of technologies, platforms, in healthcare, throughout healthcare. You mentioned before that obviously mental health will see the biggest potential to have a more near-term leap. But what if we would meet in 10 years from now? That's kind of always a question I like to ask in the end when talking to experts in their field. What is the one, two, three biggest headlines, leaps that we will have seen in healthcare if we would again meet in 2034? So what is it that people will be shocked by or positively inspired by?
Well, if I'm not looking just in our portfolio, so from our portfolio, I would say the two big things are A, we will have, to a certain extent, again, it's never going to be 100%, but like my company Atai will have solved big parts of the mental health crisis. And I think that's going to be, again, especially when you think that mental health, because it's so debilitating, yeah, mm-hmm. It has a second and tertiary effect on the whole society, because people who are depressive, they really, even on good days, they are not really showing up at work, whatever. I think like mental health has the biggest, sort of, if we solve that, has the biggest impact both on every single person suffering from it and then on the entire society. Then the other big thing where we have several solutions in our portfolio, and it might sound simple, but it's incredibly big, is the next thing after losing weight is actually keeping muscles. So there's obviously a vanity aspect. Like, I think I don't need to say, like, if we found that we have actually two medications, drugs in development, where you would keep on practically from the age of 30 or so around about, your ability to put on muscles is gradually going down. Yeah. And we found some drugs where you can keep that ability, and sometimes even without training. So I don't need to tell you that this could be the next big $1 trillion drug, because of the vanity aspect. But then if you think about it, and not, people are not aware of it because they don't see, it's not so obvious, but like many, many problems in the older age are actually rooted in muscle loss, because like when older people, and it's accelerating, again, you start at 30, but it's accelerating in later years, have not enough muscles, they cannot go upstairs, which is a simple fact, or some cannot really walk at all. And then they start staying at home, and then staying at home makes them lonely and isolated. So, but like the root cause is not that these people don't want to go out and see other people. They can't really go out and walk anymore. Yeah. Or they can't go shopping. So if you think it through, like the fact that we're losing muscles, and sometimes again, older people losing muscles severely, is one of the very restricting and debilitating effects in older age. So if we solve that, long story short, we give younger people the ability to look even better and more ripped without big training, but we give older people back the potential to really participate in life. So these are, I think, the two, if I look at our portfolio, the two biggest contribution I hope we're going to do, solving mental health and solving the problem of muscle loss. Outside of our portfolio, I'm extremely optimistic that sort of the almost kind of naughty word mRNA, like we all remember mRNA vaccines for COVID, but the true purpose of mRNA, what they actually were used to do science on, and which is now coming back in full force, is actually curing cancer. And I think we will have cured cancer in 10 years, mostly with the help of mRNA.
Cool. And for others very interested in that field, I just want to mention that we recently also had a podcast episode with Andreas Wicki and Professor Bernd Bodenmiller, who actually had a similar kind of thought to have cured cancer in the next 10 years. And this would obviously be a stellar achievement. But coming back, Christian, to you, really, really big thanks for this session, for sharing your personal experiences and elements, scientific backgrounds, a few company insights, and also, yeah, a lot of passion and inspiration that you're giving to our listeners, but also belief for better. Yeah. It's actually people like you that reshape healthcare and have a big impact on society. So thanking you for that, but also thanking you for taking the time on a Sunday evening to sit with me and do that podcast episode. Really enjoyed this. And I can only hope that many of the companies that you are currently investing and will be investing in the future will excel, and we will see better for healthcare and society.
Thank you for having me. Loved it. Happy to come back. And thanks everybody who was listening.
Thank you for tuning in to today's Strategy and Insider podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. We really appreciate your support and look forward to bringing you more thought-provoking episodes in the future. Until then, stay safe.
Strategy and Strategy made real.